Coming up on this episode of Cryptid Addicted. Isn't that fraud?
Oh my god!
I think it's Sasquatch.
Yeah.
Your wrist looks really small. Hi!
Hey.
Hi. No time for chit-chat. Let's get into it.
Okay.
By the way, if you don't know what we're talking about the Murphy Burrows Mud Monster. Go back to part one and listen to that so you know where we're at. And okay.
So, we had a huge amount of very detailed, quite compelling evidence.
Yeah.
That there was something large and smelly and white.
Yeah.
And humanoid. Yeah. But no actual photos.
No. Correct.
Just written police reports, but signed by various officers.
Yeah.
So, could still be a police hoax, but I don't know. It would be strange.
70s wasn't really the time for pull out your pocket camera and take a photo of the weird animal.
Well, they had cameras. They did take photos. They just took really, really bad photos. Like high-quality photos, but what they photographed was not proof that it was not convincing proof, I thought.
Oh, I just mean, like, if I saw the monster in the 70s, like these people, I don't have a camera in my pocket to take a photo of it. If you're expecting...
No, I agree. But, I mean, they found a camera. So they did everything they needed to get photos of good footprints. And then they didn't get photos of good footprints, which is a bit odd. But other than that...
If you're expecting a photo of the monster, it's not coming, so...
Oh, no, I'm not expecting that. Yeah.
Okay, good. Okay, moving on. Next sighting. So that was the night of the 25th / the morning of the 26th. This is the night of the 26th.
My assessment is the lack of proper footprints is really bugging me. But otherwise, it seems super credible and something that would have to be, like, taken seriously. The only way I can see it being, like, made up or not real at the moment is if this was, like, a group of friends in the town decided to make all this shit up, including the cops. And so they had some fun using, like, official police forms. but, yeah, I don't know. Anyway, go on.
Okay, just on those 2 points... The footprints comment. I mean, the only thing that dissuades me from the fact that they saw real footprints are those photos, because those photos are weird. Like, they're weird. They don't look like what was described. From the description, like, they saw lots of splodgy footprints, and some of them were really clear to the point where they could measure how big they were. And they were big, and they were, like, human size but big. These photos are just confusing. So maybe I shouldn't have included them, but like, I don't think we can ignore the fact that written down was good footprint evidence.
Yeah, but why didn't they take the photo of the good footprints is what I'm wondering. That just seems like a huge oversight. One explanation is that they were just freaked out and took really stupid photos, and the other explanation is there were no good footprints.
It does sound like they got the fuck out of there really quickly. Like, they freaked out. The guy dropped his gun. I mean...
But that was on the way back to the squad car, wasn't it? Which is where they found
footprints. So it was the Randy and the two cops, including the senior deputy, whatever the fuck it was. Then the other cop went back to the car to get the camera. They were all leaning over. And that's when they heard the scream, and they ran back to tell the guy with the camera, and then they took these photos and left.
Yeah, I guess that might explain it then.
And then just to your other point about kids dressing up or whatever, just a note about the area.
I didn't say anything about kids dressing up.
Didn't you say hoaxing or something? A joke.
I said the only way I can see this being not legit is if the cops were in on it.
If
they filled out a joke form, because there's not much to do in Murfreesboro.
Oh, okay, yeah. Right. Oh, I was just going to say, I thought you meant, like, that people were, like, playing a prank or something.
What were you going to say on that?
I was just going to say the area is quite, like, rural, and it's quite a big hunting scene, So, like, everyone has fucking guns, and they're not afraid to use them, I think. So, if you're playing silly buggers in a white suit, you're going to get shot. So, okay, cool. All right, so we're on the 26th night. So, that was 2 a.m. on the 26th. We've gone through the whole day, and we're at the evening.
Okay, one day later.
So, there was two sightings that occurred on this night. That's right. And again, so just note that everything I'm about to read to you is sourced directly from the police documents, and I'll happily send them to you to let you know I'm not talking shit, basically.
Okay, okay, cool.
I never lie anyway, but I have just, I'm just so happy. Okay. Okay, so that night, it was still, it was dark, it was Murphy Burrows. Don't know what I'm talking about. Two other young lovers, both 17, were hanging out and shooting the shit. There was a lady by name of Cheryl Ray and a different Randy named Randy Creef. Everyone's fucking named Randy in Murphy Burrows.
Not much to do in Murphy's bro, but fool around with a Randy. Okay.
Hanging out with the Randy guys. So they were sitting on Cheryl's porch and it was around 10 p.m. at night.
Okay.
They were chatting and they looked casually across the field garden area and suddenly something caught their eye. Some trees at the edge of the yard was shaking violently as if something large was moving through them. This caught both of their attention and they watched as a huge beast walked out in the open and stood there for a bit before basically realizing that they were there and just basically turning around and going back into the trees and retreating. They panicked and they fled inside. But basically, this wasn't just any teen. Randy was the son of a state trooper.
Right.
So he knew. Yeah.
This is the more competent of the two Randys.
I mean, to be fair to the first Randy, he went back out there and, like, helped the police track it and show him where it was. That's pretty courageous.
That's true. All right. So what does Randy 2 do with his state trooper knowledge?
Randy 2 says, so he knew the seriousness of his next action, but was certain of what they saw, and he instructed Cheryl's mum to call the police immediately. Cheryl's mum, who was called Mrs. Harry Ray, and apparently didn't have a first name because it was the 70s, did as she was told and called the police. Immediately, Officer Nash, who's the guy from before, and Manwaring, who's the police chief, who I mentioned at the front, so this is when he's just an officer, Manwaring. Ronald is his name. They were dispatched to the property, basically. Once they arrived, they took statements off both the teen, and they stated that, and the teen stated that it was between 7 and 8 feet tall. It looked to weigh around 300 to 350 pounds, which is around 158 kilograms. It was dirty. It was pale, dirty white or cream in color, the fur. It stood up and walked on 2 feet and had gorilla-like arms. Randy specifically identified that it had, quote, a musky odor to it.
All right.
Yum.
Yum. Yummy. Ripe. Okay.
He was quoted saying, "The thing I remember was the bulk of it, the shape, the human form, and the stench of the river slime it had it apparently had on it. It was about 8 feet tall. It was, and at least as stocky. Oh, sorry. I fucked it. It was around 8 feet tall and at least as stocky as a New York football player. We were nearly within 15 feet of it, close enough to see the body and the texture of the fur, long and hairy like an English sheepdog."
Okay, that's interesting. Have you got the report that you can send through?
I do.
Who signed the report?
I don't know.
I saw it was, so the first one you sent through, the signature was Nash's, J. Nash.
There's two signatures, though.
That was the signing officer and Lindsay.
Oh, this one is Manwaring and Nash.
Okay, so there's at least, like, three officers have signed these things. Three separate police officers. Okay, cool.
All right. So Cheryl added that her impression of the beast was, quote, "It was real tall, hairy, and I think it was white, but it was dirty, matted, and had a real bad odor. It was really rank. I never smelled anything like it. It seemed like an eternity we stood there, and then it just turned around and walked off into the woods. We could hear it trampling through the woods." They even noticed that its eyes apparently glowed red, but they thought that this might have been due to the reflection of the porch light behind them. They hypothesized that this could have been an albino Sasquatch, which has, obviously, albinos have pink eyes, so that possibly could have been the color. The police asked if they could please sketch what they saw, and they did to the best of their ability, but they're not amazing drawers. But
okay, yeah.
Here are their drawings.
This is all very curious.
So this first one is the lady's drawing, Cheryl's.
Okay. Huh. Reminds me a bit of Donald Glover.
It does. It does. It's the hair. He's got those beautiful curls. Okay. And this is from Randy. He was more about the cone head.
Oh, wow. Okay, that's very different. Okay, so they're shockingly bad drawers and have drawn quite different things, but it sounds like they both saw the same thing and just focused on different attributes. Okay.
Yeah, which I suppose is to be expected.
Yeah.
Okay, so after the formal statement was taken, the officers led the civilians into the house for safety, and they entered into the dark night, floodland, light, flap, flap, flight, flap. Having a stroke.
Floodlights
in hand. Yes.
All right. Cool.
Okay. Hold on. I just.
That'll help.
And then. It's just opening a new cider.
So they again wander into the forest to try and find this thing, with a firmer grip on their revolvers this time. One would hope.
Yes, exactly what you just said. So at this point, Police Chief Toby Berger, great name, spelt with an E, but that's fine, was so concerned about the situation as it was unraveling that he in fact dispatched the whole Murfreesboro police team to the scene.
Wow.
Which was 14 of them.
Whoa, okay.
It's only a small town. They walked to the spot where the pair had spotted the monster, where they could easily see that wild weeds had been trampled down recently by something heavy. So there was like a clear spot where they had seen it.
Okay.
They could also see that whatever had smushed the grass down clearly had entered and exited the same direction where more crushed grass was visible. They also noted that there was a cluster of broken branches half hanging off, and in one area, a small tree had been broken into two. It looked as though something very big that couldn't fit into the tight cluster of trees just smashed its way through, basically.
Okay.
They had a clear trail right now. They had a clear trail now to track, so they thought it would be better if they got a trained professional in. This is where they called Jerry Nellis, who trained dogs for authorities and people like that, and was also an officer at the Carbondale Police Department at the time.
Okay.
So Jerry turned up quickly with his 80-pound German Shepherd along to aid the search. 80 pounds is 36 kilograms.
Wait, so did he have to come from a different city? From Carbondale?
I think a nearby, yeah.
Okay.
Area.
Okay, nearby town of some kind.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So the dog's name was Reb, which is cute.
Thank you for that.
It's important. He is a fucking hero. And he was, quote, renowned for his zealous tracking.
Okay. All right, a zealous tracking dog. Okay.
According to the police report, this doggo was, quote, trained to attack, search buildings, and track.
Okay.
So it was like one of those like really hardworking police doggos.
Yeah, okay, cool.
So the doggy seemed to have quite an easy job because all the humans could smell this putrid stench that was hanging in the air, almost like the creature had sweated stink into the grass. So the dog set off pretty easily. It made its way down the hill where the two eyewitnesses actually saw the beast going down the hill.
Mm-hmm.
Periodically, the dog would quote, and this is from the report again, quote, kept stopping and sniffing at a slime substance on the weeds. Nellis, who's Jerry, the dog owner, mm-hmm. put some of the slime between his fingers, rubbed it, and it left a black coloring on his fingers. Each time the dog found amounts of it, the dog would hesitate.
Each time the dog found amounts of it. Amounts of it, right. He would hesitate. Okay, cool.
Mm. As Manwaring said, I saw the substance and I smelled the smell myself. They noticed that the substance was, quote, much like the sewage sludge that settles at tanks on the direct line between the river and the Ray House. So it's a bit dodgy, but dodgily written, but basically what they're saying is between the house where the sighting occurred and the river, there was, like, sewage tanks which congealed this black slop.
Ugh.
And it looked very similar. So possibly whatever this thing is has been, like, cozying up to the black slop and leaving it around, basically.
Right, okay.
Okay, so to cut a long story short, basically, the doggy leads them to a pond and a wooded area.
Mm-hmm.
The dog wanted to go down a steep embankment, but it was too thick and bushy for them to go through. It was too impenetrable. And so it seems like from the report, they got frustrated with the dog wanting to go in there. So they put the dog in the car and they searched on foot for, like, a way around it. After a while, they found a different way to get to where the dog wanted to go, and they got the dog out again. So there's a bit of faffing, basically, okay. But right, that's the summary. So the dog's back out, and the puppy indeed picked up the scent again and led them to an abandoned barn in the woods. This all sounds like creepy pasta made up shit, but I mean,
yeah.
The fact that so
do Bigfoot traditionally, are they supposed to live in, like, human-made shelters?
There's a theory that they live in caves. So, like, if there's an abandoned cave-like structure in the woods, it could very well be like, hey, it's raining.
Let's go in here.
I'll just go in here.
Okay, cool.
But it's just interesting because, like, everything to this point, like, that sentence, to an abandoned barn into the woods, ooh, is like, okay, yeah. Creepypasta. Some guy on Reddit just made this up,
but it's in a police report, yeah.
But it's in a police report. And then the bit that's like, oh, no, this is reality, is like, this barn is on the Bullard property, which is located in the east part of Ray's house and a little north of the river. Like, all those boring fucking facts that are like, no, this is an actual place and this is exactly where it is.
Yeah.
So, like, if I followed those directions, I would turn up at the barn. Like.
Okay, all right.
Okay. So Reb the dog, he grew closer and signaled, but he wouldn't go into the barn. He wouldn't go close to the barn. He was just, like, freaking out. The owner tried to encourage the dog and, like, ordered it to go in. And then eventually he, like, shoved the dog, but, like, the dog was, like, yelping and barking and wouldn't go any closer.
Okay.
At this point, Jerry, the bastard, picks up the dog and throws it into the doorway. Fucking Jerry. And then immediately the dog, like, freaked out and ran out and was, like, whimpering profusely. Okay. And the report states, quote, Nellis stated that the dog was trained to search buildings and had never backed down from anything. Nellis could offer no explanations for why the dog had become scared and would not go into the barn.
Okay.
So the dog wouldn't go in. Eventually, the surrounding officers seemed to sum up courage, guns drawn, and they entered the barn and it was empty. But it was quite a big barn, and there's a theory that whatever it was potentially could have easily escaped from the back. So,
yeah. A theory among whom?
The police, generally. Oh, okay,
right.
Yeah.
As in, it says that in the report.
It doesn't say that in the report, no. It does not say that in the report, no.
Okay.
Quotes later.
Okay.
So, they continued the search, but, quote, they were unable to locate the creature.
Hmm.
So the second sighting on that night is a little confusing. It actually occurs just before that sight from Randy and Cheryl's sighting, just like 10 minutes before. So a guy called Dave Barrell, who was the neighbor of Ray, came forward after he had heard about his next door neighbor's sighting, because he said that the night before his son was in the garden collecting, like, firebugs when the kid ran inside screaming and crying, and the child was inconsolable and told his father that a huge white ghost was in their yard. The dad had dismissed his child for being like just making up a story, but did find it odd how certain and upset the child was. And then he read and heard about his neighbor's sighting, and it turns out it was 10 minutes before they had their sighting that the kids saw a big white ghost in their garden.
Okay.
So he was sure it's the monster, basically.
Okay.
Cool.
And then he tells police about this the day after.
He tells police about that, yes.
Okay,
so
cool.
Here is the police reports. Again, I've given you the juicy bits, so you don't need to read them, but if you want to have a little scope out of anything of importance, feel free to.
Mm-hmm. Huh. This is much more rigorous than our normal investigations.
I know. I know.
Okay, so yeah.
I know it's going to be a hard sell, so.
All right, okay. Let's persevere.
All right. Okay, cool. So during this time, the police noticed that there was a surge in mobs of armed locals determined to kill the beast themselves. Basically, people were scared and guns were a thing.
Right, okay.
That was June. July rolls around, still in 1973. Sightings of the beast have occurred in between these times, but I didn't include all of them. Some of them are really just like, I saw it and then it was gone, so boring.
Okay.
So I've just got the juicy stuff here.
Okay,
so
cool.
This sighting occurs 10 days later after the one with the second Randy that I just talked about. So not a long time.
Okay.
So it was 6:05 p.m. and Officer Nash, who was the guy from before, and a new officer, Jay Glodo, were waved down during one of their patrols around Murfreesboro. So they're like,
okay. What day is this? What date?
This is...
You said it was July, but what?
July 7th.
Oh, right. Okay. Okay, cool.
Yeah. So, cops are waved down on the street.
Okay.
The man who stops them is a guy called Bert Miller, who... I just wanted to add...
We've all got great names.
I know. This is great. He lived... Because it's a police report, I can see where he lives... He lived at a place called Bald Knob.
Is there a street address for Bald Knob?
No, it just says Bald Knob. Oh, that's great. Anyway, so the area where this guy was near the West Shelter in the Riverside Park. So the Riverside Park, you might remember from the very first sighting, the Lover's Lane, the making out in the park. So that's the same park.
Okay.
Bert Miller was the owner of Miller Carnival, who was set up in the park, basically. So he was the owner of this carnival set up in the park.
Okay.
He was keen to speak to officers about some weird occurrences that had been happening in the area, stressing that he was not happy about having to talk to them. He was worried that reporting these things would basically scare his customers away and not wanted to come to the area, to his carnival.
To his carnival.
But he felt it was the right thing to do, so he thinks that what he's seen could pose a risk to people and everyone, so he thought he'd tell.
Okay.
So he takes the police to four of his workers, and he okays the sheepish and worried workers to tell the officers what they've seen.
Okay.
So these four are Otis Norris, Ray Adkisson, Wesley Lavender, and Charles Kimball.
Okay. These are the carnival workers.
Yes, correct. Okay. They sat down and explained that in the early hours of that morning, 7th of July, at around 2 a.m., they had been relaxing together after a long day. Mm-hmm. The night was quite quiet and silent, and they suddenly heard a disturbance amongst their miniature Shetland ponies. The show ponies.
Yeah.
So these are like the kind that you put like a toddler on and you just
Yeah.
So they're pretty docile, but they're like whinnying and freaking out and stuff. Apparently they can hear them.
Okay.
So apparently they could even hear the tethers. They like had tied them to some trees and they can hear the tethers like torting. I don't know if that's the right word. Like,
okay, yeah,
being pulled against and there's
groaning
fuss
or whatever. Yeah,
yeah.
Okay,
so they note that this area was east of the West Shelter and behind the carnival trucks. Again, just a boring fact, but it shows that it's credible, I guess.
Okay.
The workers noted that this is unusual behavior because the ponies are really calm, so they went to go check if everything was okay. They came closer and then they saw it. As the report states, quote, "The workers proceeded around the truck to check the ponies and observed a large creature described as a 7 to 8 feet tall with light brown hair over its entire body, standing erect on two legs and weighing 300 to 400 pounds. The creature was reported standing very near the ponies and seemed to be curious of them, but made no advance." So they were shocked by what they had seen, and they all basically freaked out and ran away and bolted to Bert, who's like he's the head honcho.
Mm-hmm.
So they ran to the Bert guy and they told him what he'd seen, and they all came back probably with guns, but the animal that they had seen had left.
Right.
So that was at 2 a.m. Approximately at 3 a.m., Charles Kimball, who was not one of the original three, he was a fourth guy.
I love that they all just have guns. Like, well, let's go get the guns.
That's American.
This is bizarre. Anyway, yeah. Sorry.
So Charles Kimball was a different guy. He wasn't part of the original three. He had heard about what happened, and he was a little bit nervous about the ponies' well-being. So he was walking nearby, and he went to go check on them. And when he got there, he immediately noticed that a creature was standing near them, and it was fascinated by the miniature ponies, who were unsettled but not as noisily as before. The ponies were unsettled by the creature's presence.
Okay.
He noted that the creature had its head cocked to one side, and he described it as being, quote, deeply curious. So Charles, again, he ran back to the owner to be like, help, help, what the fuck? And when they came back, the creature was gone.
Okay.
So they filled in a police report.
Right.
I can send you.
This is all very strange. I don't know where I'm going to land on this. This is, I'm shook.
Yeah, man. Following the sighting, people got more restless and even headed out to the park to try and kill the beast. At one point, they officially had to close the park because armed groups of people were going there and risked shooting each other. There was even people camping in the park in hopes that they would lay eyes on the monster.
Wow.
People got really excited.
America's so cool.
So to disarm the situation, Chief Berger insisted that he would instead bring a... He is the Chief Berger.
Oh, man.
I know. He insisted that he would bring in an expert to capture the creature so everyone could go back home and he would handle it.
Okay.
The man he chose for the job was a man called Hawken Sorkin, who was an insurance agent and Sasquatch enthusiast.
What? 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 Burger, what are you doing? Okay.
So,
were they friends?
I don't know. Possibly.
How did he find this guy?
Oh, I don't know. There was no internet back then, right?
I guess so. That's just like who knows how to hunt a Sasquatch. All right. Okay. Cool.
So, Mr. Sorkin speculated that this year's flooding potentially forced the creature to move from its natural habitat, which is perhaps a cave down the river, into Murfreesboro, which is why there was a sudden spike of its existence or whatever.
Okay, so Mr. Sorkin just is speculating wildly. And what happened then?
And he does some more crazy shit, basically. He led a group of sad group of five men who consisted largely of reporters and lawyers, just his mates, into the woods. And this was in the fall of 1973.
Okay.
So he claimed that quote, private groups were offering a reward of $2.3 million for the creature's capture. But no one knows where he got that from. And... He's crazy.
Oh, okay. So things are becoming a little less credible now. Where's all this from? Is this also in police reports?
No, this is just like extended research.
Oh.
But this is just one guy, right? This is not any less credible. You're always going to get lunatics.
Yeah, sure.
So he was keen for the challenge. Hawken packed the essentials. Chocolate. A banana. A stun gun that could take down a 500-pound animal, apparently. And some shotguns.
Nice. Okay.
The essentials. He also arranged for local zoos to have an area on standby for when he delivered the beast, which is extremely cocky of him. He had a helicopter with a cage also on standby for the right moment. And at one point, he apparently, quote, heard very loud yell or guttural sound between a roar and a bellow. They also saw some footprints and they saw some ripped up saplings, but ultimately found fuck all.
Okay, despite having a helicopter on standby for like 2 weeks and all the zoos on high alert. Okay.
And some bananas as well.
Yeah, and millions of dollars in private funding awaiting him. Okay.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Okay, so during this time, news of the creature spread around the whole country, and it started getting reported on around America, including in the New York Times.
Oh.
It was also covered on radio in New York and Massachusetts. And Tony Stevens, who's a newspaper editor, said, "This is no hoax. This is a hunting country, you know, and anyone who goes around in an animal costume is going to get his butt shot off."
Okay.
So, they're the main sightings. The next thing I have is in June 76.
Okay, 3 years later.
Yeah.
By the way, $2 million back then is $19 million now, just adjusting for inflation. So that's not true. But let's carry on.
So it depends how you're feeling. I've got two sightings here. I can either talk you through them. I would say they're more in the camp of just general Bigfoot as opposed to it being this one same thing.
Oh, okay.
It sounds like this one creature moved on after this sighting and went elsewhere.
Okay.
So up to you. I don't mind.
Huh, that's interesting. I'll hear them. So they're still in Murfreesboro?
Yes, they are still in Murfreesboro. So
no, I think that's interesting because, like, if this thing was real, I assume the theory is it's an albino member of a population.
Correct, yeah.
So absolutely. Let's hear about the rest of the population.
Okay. So there was some, again, sightings on and off, boring stuff, small stuff. Fuck it, gone, don't care. Nothing to dwell on, only the meaty shit for us. So then in June 1976, the Money Monster came back to town. Some people gloss over this sighting, but I think it's pretty cool because, I mean, it's kids, but anyway, you'll see. It's a good sign. So 19th of June.
Okay.
It was a minute to 10 p.m., when concerned mother, Mrs. Ray Kells, who...
That's so specific.
I know. Police reports, you know. Mrs. Ray Kells, again, a lady without a first name because it was the 70s and apparently it was that weird time.
Mrs. Wife of Man. Yes. Okay.
A weird time where every lady forgot her name. Anyway, so she calls the popo and reports that her son and two of his friends had a traumatic encounter. They were worried that the beast was still out there, so they wanted the police to come out in force and, like, check it out, drive it away, protect.
Mm-hmm.
So four of the finest came out: Jay Nash, our man, R. Schultz, who's a new guy, and Man Rolting, again, our man, and someone called Jay Martin, who's a new guy. So four cops.
Okay, cool.
They reached the property, and the parents explained that they were hesitant to call the police, but the boys were so adamant and distraught about what they had seen that they had no other option.
Okay.
So basically, the boys came in distraught, and the parents reinstilled how serious it was to call the police, like, to the boys.
Mm-hmm.
But the boys still insisted that they had to call and they had to report what they had seen.
Hmm. Okay.
So the officers sat down with the three boys who had the sighting, who were Ricky Kells, David Taylor, and Russell Ward, and interviewed them separately.
All right.
Which is important. A good technique.
It's a good practice, yes.
Good policing. Good policing. Good copping. So Ricky, who was 10 years old, stated that they were playing wiffle ball when basically they went to look for a foul ball, which went between two houses and into the tree line. As he was walking down the hill, he observed a, quote, large creature approximately 7 to 8 feet tall standing next to the woods. He states that it had large ears and was covered in a gray hair and did not move when they were looking at it. Ricky called to the other two boys and said, fucking look, basically, and they all saw the beast. After a beat, the terror took over and they all ran home to their parents and explained what they had seen. Ricky said that when he started running away, he could hear the monster entering the woods with a loud thumping noise as it walked away. So he didn't see it move, but he heard it move when he was running away.
How far away was the beast supposed to be? Did you say?
No, he doesn't say.
No. It'd be weird to be able to... Even really heavy things, you can't really... Like, they don't make the ground thud, even if they're very heavy, because the ground is, like, also very sturdy. Unless it was, like, breaking of trees and stuff, yeah.
I think it's, like, breaking twigs. Yeah, I think it's, like, just smashing leaves and twigs and stuff underneath.
Okay, yeah.
Like, imagine a rhino.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, cool. Okay, and so they interviewed them all separately?
Yes, so that was one guy, boy.
And their stories check out?
Yeah, so David, age 11, told the same story, except he said that Ricky didn't say, look over there. He screamed and pointed at them. So, a little less manly.
Oh my god! Ricky squealed like a little bitch. Okay.
He described it as grey, 7 foot tall, had large ears or perhaps lumps on the side of his head. And he also, quote, stated it made a thumping loud noise on the ground as it left. He said he didn't see it move either, though. Russell, who was age 13, apparently was quite shaken up compared to the other boys. His mother said he was barely coherent and because he was so upset. And he also stated that Ricky had screamed before he saw the creature. And he saw the creature begin to turn itself sideways and raise its left arm before himself ran away. And he heard the distinct thumping sounds as it walked away. And Russell drew a sketch of what he had seen as well. This is the sketch. He is 13. He cannot draw. But he can draw as well as I can. So... We need to cut him some slack.
Ah, yep. Okay. Cool.
It's a big humanoid thing.
Russell Ward. Okay, yep, it's some lines on a page. Cool. Okay, but their stories sound...
Yeah.
I mean, they sound similar, but also, like, there's not a lot of detail in any of the stories. Like, it would be pretty easy to get three people to tell that same story.
Yeah.
Like, if the three got together and were like, hey, we'll say we saw a thing, and then it walked off into the forest.
Yep.
I guess there are little details that line up, like none of them saw it leaving, and they all heard a thud before it left.
Mm.
I don't know. What do you think?
Well, the third one saw it leaving. Russell saw it leaving, he said. But I think,
that's right.
I think the way that the mother describes Russell so upset, like she'd never seen him before, and the fact that they were like, now, like... Calling the police is a serious thing. Like, we don't just call the police. Yeah. And they were like, no, we have to call the police. Like, they were really shaken up.
I have to go, shut up, mom. We got to call the police. Yeah.
You're a wrong adult.
Yeah. Okay.
So, yeah.
So
a little bit more on that. The officers inspected the area after they talked to the boys.
Ah, cool.
And they were not able to find any distinct footprints because the ground was quite hard. But they did ascertain that around 100 yards from the site... of the sighting, several large rocks had been visibly turned over and moved very recently, potentially as though something was looking for like bugs and grubs or something underneath it. So a lot of movement had been happening close to the riverbank nearby.
Okay.
Possibly related, possibly not related.
And this is what? Sorry, whereabouts is this? Is this
Murfreesboro?
The bank of the big muddy river still?
I'm not sure.
Because that's where the Riverside Park is, where the carnival was and those sightings.
This says Westwood Lane. I'm sure we could Google it.
Let me have a look.
Westwood Lane.
West. Doesn't seem to be near a river of any kind.
There is a little pool of water. Oh, okay. Well, there's a big muddy river right behind it.
Well, it's a fair bit away. It's like half a kilometre away.
So this is 100 yards, which I don't work in yards. I don't know what that means. If I just do a point there... Oh, it's a 50-minute walk if I take all the roads, which is not how I want to go there. So I imagine like a 20-minute walk?
Yeah, I can just measure the distance.
2.5 miles, it says. I don't work in miles.
Yeah, it's like 1 kilometre to the river. So I, if it was a big property, but they'd have to cross other properties to get there.
It's not very... 1 kilometre is tiny.
Yeah, but there's other like properties in the way. So they were just at their friend's house, right?
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe they walked down to the river. Okay. Cool. All right. So this is a reasonably substantial sighting.
Yep. I've got the police reports that I can send you if you would like. I mean.
No, that's all right. I trust that you have them.
I've already sent them. Okay. All right. So 27th of June. Not too much. After that, okay, I've gone on a little rant here. Okay, the 70s when you could leave your 11-year-olds to play in the woods by themselves at 9 p.m. and not give a fuck. That's pretty much what happened here. So, the police report comes from Merle Mifflin, father of two of these three children. Karen Gruber is the other child, and Michael and Melinda are his children.
Okay.
Also, get this. So, Merle Mifflin lives on Mifflin Road.
Whoa.
Is that because,
like... they rename the road because he's just such a great guy? Or it's just a coincidence?
Is that, like, back in the 70s, you, like, carve your own little plot of land and you carve your own road and you're like, I'll name this road. Devison Road.
This is Mifflin Road. Yeah.
This is Megan's Road. I don't know. I need to know, but I don't know. Anyway, so there's three kids and their dog hanging out in the woods.
Mm-hmm.
The dog starts barking wildly. They freak out when they see something large moving bipedally through the bush. Again, Nash, our man, and someone else called F. Favoldi comes to interview them separately, and they all say the same thing. It's a monster, 6 foot tall. It has dark fur, possibly from mud, and heading towards the riverbank.
Hmm.
Karen, one of the kids, the one who's not related to this dad, described it as, quote, real tall, fat, and big. Thanks, Karen. Yeah, okay, so...
Did they do any of their own searching afterwards to find any evidence themselves?
Oh, possibly.
Because, like, the overturned rocks is not such a big deal, unless they're, like, huge boulders from the last sighting.
Yeah, it says...
But,
It says, officers... Yeah. Accompanied by compliant, checked the entire surrounding area of the residence on foot, but could find no trace of any large animal.
Okay, I guess that happens sometimes.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay.
Is it so? This is the major sightings we've covered.
This is the major sightings. I have a little like summary of people reflecting, like our mate Berger.
Please.
Okay. So 32 years after the case and 3 years into retirement. Man Waring, who we remember, was one of the officers in the thick of it, had to say this. In Murfreesboro, there are only two unsolved cases. The case of the big muddy monster still remains open. Quote, it's an unsolved case because I can't tell you what it was. In an interview about his time, he explains that despite it being so many years on, he is still able to recount those haunting evenings as if they happened yesterday. Police Chief Tony Berger concluded the following, quote, a lot of things in life are unexplained, and this is just another one. We don't know what the creature is, but we do believe that what these people saw was real. We have tracked it, and the dog's got a definite scent. So today, Murfreesboro embraces its brush with Bigfoot and celebrates it as a somewhat of a mascot of the town. So here's the final photo I have.
Okay.
And on their tourist come to Murfreesboro website video. They have a suit of a white Bigfoot surrounded by babes. So that's it.
Okay. All right. Interesting. What's the other unsolved case in Murfreesboro?
I don't know. Maybe some horrible murder. I don't know.
Yeah, some... I'm feeling the 1976 encounters, so the ones 3 years after the first stuff, I'm probably going to give a little less weight to, because they were kids. There wasn't really much evidence the police found to corroborate what people said, except for some upturned rocks. I guess it would depend on the size of the rocks whether that's valuable info or not. But the first set of sightings seem really difficult to dispute. All I could come up with on the skeptic side is that it might be like... I mean, you have to have a lot of people in on making this shit up, right?
Yeah.
I guess it could just be cops making it up, but then, like, they're putting real people's names down, which would be, like, a pretty serious... bad thing to do for a cop.
Yeah, these weren't just, like, one or two cops, or they weren't just, like, bottom of the rung. Like, one of them ended up being the deputy sheriff. One of them even became the sheriff.
One was the deputy at the time, yeah.
Yeah, that's true. That's risky business.
Yeah.
Isn't that fraud?
Yeah, so that's... I mean, it could just be, like, in Kangaroo Valley, where my mum lives, which is also a small town, one of the firefighters got caught setting fires because they just had nothing to do up there. Ooh. So he would set little fires, and then the whole fire department would go down and put them out. And eventually he got caught doing it, but it's just, like, that sort of shit happens sometimes because there's nothing to do, and it's, like, you want to feel a bit like a hero. I guess it put this town on the map as well. Like, it's now a tourist thing, and... But... It doesn't seem to be just a one-off, like, one cop doing this. Like, they've all signed these reports. So,
yeah.
I don't know what to make of it. It's really weird. What do you think?
I think it's Sasquatch.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it is. I think albino is a good reason for it being white. Like, it's a very cool case. I couldn't go past it. I've been wanting to choose the right taster into Bigfoot for a while, and, like, I thought this was absolutely perfect because I read more about it, and I thought it was so credible, and I love true crime, and, like, reading police reports about this was like mecca. It was amazing.
Yeah, I would love to, if we were like a Josh Gates type thing and we didn't have jobs, I would like to fly to America and talk to them and be like, explain these shitty photos of footprints, because that's the only thing that's, like, making me hesitate a bit. But if there was a good explanation for that, like, if they take us out into the mud and they're like, well, this is just what it looks like when you walk through mud. It looks really weird. Like, it seals up and gets all gloopy. Then...
Yeah. Or they were like, all right, we'll be honest. We were fucking scared. We just took photos of our footprints, some weird-looking footprints back at the station.
Like... Yeah. Well, no, that would make me feel less, less likely to believe the rest of their stuff. But,
right.
Yeah. I don't know, I'd be keen to look into it more, but at the moment, I guess I'm leaning towards, I think there was something huge and weird that everyone saw. I'm not sure if it's a Bigfoot, because I'm not convinced the Bigfoot exists yet, and that's, like, a whole nother thing. But it sounds like there was a huge, like, just what was described, a huge humanoid, very heavy thing that was in Murfreesboro around that time. I don't know if it was a Bigfoot, maybe it was... I don't know what else it could be. Maybe it was like a bear on its hind legs or something. Because a lot of these reports were like it just standing still. Which bears can do on their hind legs. I don't know if there's bears in this region, though. I don't know. What, do you have any alternative explanations? Or basically it's just Bigfoot?
Basically it's just Bigfoot. I think maybe the reason it was like so stinky and like covered in mud. But because like I imagine if it is a primate, it is intelligent. And it probably saw itself and was like, well, fuck, I'm not camouflaged like my brother who's brown, so maybe it was like using the mud as like a caking like camouflage thing. So I think that's maybe its reason for like hanging around the muddy river so much, or like being matted in fur and stuff.
The reason, just The reason I'm less likely to believe in Bigfoots more generally is that they've been talked about for decades. There's bajillions of sightings, and yet no one's shot or found the corpse of a Bigfoot. Like, this is not like the tiny mouse deer where there's so few of them that, like, I mean, these things are supposedly all, like, a larger number, and yet no evidence. So, like, no corpse, no body. Why is that?
I mean, I could go into that for hours. There's apparently, like, there has been. Like, the books I'm reading with Bill Sheehan, like, a couple driving along the car in the car see a truck in, like, the shoulder, and they stop, and they see he's been in an accident. They go to his window, and he's, like, in shock, and he's, like, holding his head. And he's like, I hit a Bigfoot. I hit a Bigfoot. And the wife stays in the car, and the guy goes out and goes to call the police, and the police come, and two ambulance comes, and he goes with a policeman to see the Bigfoot, and it is indeed a Bigfoot, and it blinks, and it has blood coming out of its mouth. And they basically, the cop shoots the Bigfoot to dispatch it. They put it in the ambulance, and they never see again. The husband and wife go home, and they're like, oh my god, this is going to be such big news, and they wait and they wait, and they don't see anything on news. And then the next day they wait and they see nothing. They call up their local, like, news realtors, and they're like, have you heard about this? Why aren't you showing this? And they're like, all the news outlets are like, I don't know what you're talking about. So there is this entire, like, cover-up.
That's not true. That's so obviously a bullshit story. That's what you're pulling out. Or they found it and they shot it, but then it was a huge cover-up.
Well, there's many, many cases like this. I'm just saying there's a whole, like, government conspiracy thing layer.
No, that's layers of nonsense.
I'm not saying I believe that.
It's like you've got these, you start off with these really credible sightings, which is what we've discussed today, and it's like, okay, there's something. And then your explanation for that is less credible, which is there's a whole population of Bigfoots. And then when I ask you, why is there no evidence of that, there's a further explanation, which is there's also a government conspiracy to cover up the fact that there are Bigfoots. That's just a slippery slope, as far as I'm concerned.
That's why Bigfoot is so hard, because there is so many layers, and some of them are absolutely batshit.
Okay.
I'm not saying that this is or is not batshit. I have not looked into it enough to make a decision. Oh. Honest to God, no idea. Have not looked into it enough. Yeah. But there's things like, you know, Bigfoot can speak telepathically and stuff.
Yeah, which is,
I mean... Yeah. I don't know. I don't know. If Bigfoot exists to me, it is a flesh and blood creature. It is something like, you know, an orangutan, a mountain gorilla.
Yeah.
Like, imagine seeing a mountain gorilla for the first time. You'd be like, what the fuck? Like, it looks like a human. Like, it's amazing.
Yeah. Are there primates in North America that we know of that science recognizes?
No. No. Just us.
Okay. Yeah, and we're not.
Which is why it's...
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's leave the Bigfoot thing aside then. But this, you've sold me. I think there was a humanoid in Murfreesboro in 1973. Mm. I don't know if it was a Bigfoot. Maybe it was a human-looking thing that is an animal we're already aware of, like a bear.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know anything about Murfreesboro. It could be there's no bears in Illinois, or like within thousands of kilometers of Illinois. So I'm not sure.
It doesn't sound very bear-like to me either. Like,
no?
All these drawings.
Like, tall, humanoid, can stand on 2 feet.
Like, if you look at these sketches don't look like a bear. Like, bears have small T-Rexy hands. Like, especially if they're...
No, they got big arms. Bears have, like, big, thick arms. They're not T-Rexes.
I think the biggest differentiation for a bear and this is two things.
Mm.
One, ears on the top, as opposed to ears on the side like a human, which one of the reports I remember reading about that.
Yeah.
I think the very first one. And that snout, like they have a very obvious snout.
Yeah, that's true. And people like know what bears look like. So maybe it was like a weird bear, like there was that weird mutated chimp we talked about the other week. I don't know. Like it could... It could also not be a bear. It could be that it's a primate or something. It's just...
Because you're doing the thing that I was just doing about the government spiritually. You're saying, oh, well, maybe it's a weird bear. Maybe it's a bear with mange or whatever the fuck. Like, you're adding another...
I'm saying there's lots of different explanations, but my explanations are things we know already happen. Like, we know that there are animals with mutations for a fact. That's like 100% certainty. That's not a second unlikely assumption. Mm. And we know that there are like albino creatures, and we know there are bears in America. Whereas the alternative explanation, which does fit better with the evidence, is that it's a primate. But that doesn't fit with anything else we know. Like, that would be really weird if it was true, because there's no record of primates in America aside from ourselves. And there's, so that's the reason I'm unlikely to assume it's a, or I'm reluctant to assume it's a primate, is that that would, like, completely change our understanding of what animals live in America.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely, yeah. I wonder if Neanderthals were here. Like, I'm sure some of our ancestors that we killed out were here once.
Yeah, but that Neanderthals died, like, millions of years ago, right? I'm very interested in this, and I think it's a huge bit of evidence that should be put on the corkboard consider whether, like, we need to update our understanding of what kind of creatures there are. But I don't know if it's enough on its own to make me think that there are primates in North America, because this is one group of sightings in 1973. But I mean, if we do more episodes, that could change.
That's the plan.
Yeah.
I'm going to build a spider web of indoctrination.
Yeah, so I think there was definitely something definitely weird in 1973. Some large humanoid Bigfoot-sounding thing in this place.
Fantastic.
Not yet convinced that Bigfoots exist.
I like the word yet.
Yet, yeah.
I'm happy with this. I'm very happy.
Yeah, good job. Very good job. Very, all very right. Thorough research.
Cool. Thank you very much. Thank you for sticking around for however long this has taken.
Do you think we should try and get in touch with anyone who was around at the time? Or are they all dead now? Only 73.
Gosh, I wouldn't even know how to start.
50 years later. Well, I mean, they'll have a police department still. And the people there now will probably know people who knew people who were there at the time.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe it's something we could do.
The massive document that I got all these police sightings from, a lot of the last chunk of stuff that included in it was letters that people from around America had written to like Mr. Berger and stuff, Chief Berger, which I think contain his address. I mean, potentially out of date now.
Okay.
But potentially they have. I mean, they clearly have been contacted before, so we could send a letter or even an email, because it's not 1970.
Yeah, I mean, it's 50 years later, so Berger might be dead, but if he was, like, 50 at the time, because he was chief. But, yeah, maybe some of the young bucks from the time would still be around.
Nash.
Nash, yeah, I want to talk to Nash.
Jimmy Nash.
That could be cool. Maybe we send off an email, and if we get nothing back, nothing, then we just leave it. But if we, it'd be cool to do an interview with someone there at the time, because we're doing interviews now. Yeah.
Apparently so. All right. Yeah, I can do it. I can see what I can do.
Yeah. Oh, I'm happy to send it if you want, because I don't do anything.
Yeah, I can send you the link of where I got this thing from, and you can have a look at everything in more detail.
Yeah, that'd be cool. All right. Cool. Well, thank you for the episode.
Cool. All right. Thanks, guys.
Making my skeptical credentials again. Good job.
I'll do something stupid next time. That'd be great. All right. Well, that's the end of the episode. You can send us your stories or cryptid suggestions or what have you to cryptidaddicted@gmail.com.
So you can also get us on social media. Our Facebook is Cryptid Space Addicted, and we're on Instagram as well, which is where we used to do like backstage photos. I don't know if we still do that anymore, because we don't have a single stage that we share. But on Instagram, we are cryptid_addicted.
We can take a screenshot of this.
Yeah, yes.
Hold on, I'll take a screenshot. How do I do this? Wait. All right. Get into a position you're enjoying.
So you can enjoy the visual experience as well as the audio.
Show us the guns. Go on. I haven't seen the guns in years. That's great. Oh, you're gonna hate that. Like deformed.
But yeah, please reach out to us. We would like to hear what you think about us, what you think about cryptids, any sightings you've had, anything at all. Very interested to hear.
Yes.
Or if you want us to go into a new direction or interview someone or whatever. Yeah. Oh, let's have a look at the phone.
It's a little deformed because of the low quality of the connection of the internet.
There are, you can kind of see some muscles. You squid.
Your wrist looks really small. You're like got chicken legs, but for your wrist.
Yeah.
Get those wrist exercises going.
Yeah.
All right. Anyway, we're also cryptidaddicted.com, which is our website thing, which apparently a lot of people use. I didn't know that, but I should probably update it some more. So sorry, I'll update that more. All right. Okay. That's the end. Goodbye, my friends.
Thank you, everyone, for listening.
Thank you.
Goodbye.
Bye.
We did it.
We did it. I like the bit at the end where we talked to the audience.
To the people who didn't leave when we told them to. Yeah. The disobedient listeners. Yeah.
Go home.
Go home. Yeah.
Stop it.
It's time to leave. Yeah. Alright, all right, bye all everyone.
Right. Ah, that was good. That was fun.
Is anyone still left? No. The joke's over. Fuck off.